leaders who choose to make its decisions from the individuals on the ground. 99.9% of the time, they are honorable people trying to do their best to serve their country. They put their lives on the front lines, and I think we should all do our best never to blame them for the policies that are pursued by those in Washington who frankly care so little about them. That's not to say that members of the military don't ever do wrong. Lindy England, for example, the West Virginia young woman comes to mind, but her case, as we've talked about, is more, I think, attributable to Dick Cheney than to her own bad decisions. So let's just remember them on Memorial Day and not forget that the choices they've made are indeed choices where they themselves are doing their best to help their country. Now let's talk about the news. Well, there's two main events, of course, that happened yesterday. The one that I'll spend most of the time talking about will be the selection of Justice Sonia Sotomayor. I, like you, I'm busy reading everything I can about her. You may remember that I did suggest she was the front runner about a week or two ago, and so I had looked into her a little bit then. But I, like, well, everyone in Washington and most people around the country, well, many people around the country, am busy looking into who she is, what her opinions are. So far, it seems so good. There are some details that I will talk about this hour. I will try to bring you up on everything I know and let you come to your own conclusions. But it appears that she is a competent jurist. Who's pretty darn good, actually, and who will serve a liberal cause as well. There are some concerns of mine, I have to admit. I don't pretend to say that she is my favorite choice or the perfect choice, but certainly she will almost certainly be confirmed. She is a terrific political choice, and she's a pretty good intellectual choice, too. Maybe I just have very impossibly high standards for Supreme Court justice. So we'll talk about her. We'll talk about how the right will try to misconstrue her. My concern about her is that she's insufficiently liberal, not that she is too liberal. I think that's a very hard thing to make. I think that as a child of disadvantage, she is someone who will very much look out for the disadvantaged. In that respect, I think she'll be very liberal. But, you know, the fact that she will be the sixth Catholic on the court does make me be concerned, at least to some extent, about decisions on everything from abortion to gay rights. Let's hope she makes the right decisions. I'll get back to her, definitely, and I also want to hear from you into what your thoughts are on Sonia Sotomayor. All you have to do is dial 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Now, I also want to talk about the California decision. Many people have been understandably upset by that decision. I've heard a lot of emotion from that decision. And I have to say that most people who are extremely emotional and extremely upset by the decision, I don't think they really knew what most of us knew, which is that this was very much an expected decision. Like it or not, and I like it not, the California Constitution allows a majority of the people of California to change that state's constitution. And it bears repeating how rare that is, and frankly how harmful that is, not just on civil rights, but on a whole host of issues. So I also want to talk this hour about California's proposition system. I happen to know it well. I was a resident of California for some 7 years. In fact, bordering on 8 years as a trial lawyer, and also as someone who was somewhat active politically in California. And I think that California's budget problems, as well as Proposition 8, show the real problem with a pure, direct democracy. And again, I'm not saying that referendum are necessarily bad. I understand the need for them when they're entrenched interests in the state capital. I have some problems with California's, and we'll talk about that. But clearly, a constitution should never be overturned by majority vote. Let us never forget that if Alabama and Mississippi had the referendum process, they simply would have reinstated the Jim Crow laws. and it was only federal law. It's only because of federal law. It's only because of the United States Supreme Court that Alabama and Mississippi and Arkansas and Louisiana and Tennessee and Georgia's laws banning marriage between blacks and whites no longer are effective. Indeed, Alabama had a very close vote just a few years back over whether or not to overturn their miscegenation statute, the statute that prohibits black and white marriages, and it happened to be a very close vote, even though the statute could not mean anything, right? I mean, you have laws that are unconstitutional. They may be on the books, but they don't do anything because the Supreme Court has declared them unconstitutional. So I want to talk about the California decision. And in general, the question of whether or not a constitution should be overruled by the people. And also want to talk about Judge Sonia Sotomayor, who I fully expect to be the next justice of the Supreme Court. I want to give you a chance to call in and say what's on your mind with either topic. The toll-free number, of course, is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let me know what you've heard. What have you heard about Judge Sotomayor? You may have heard something I haven't heard. That's quite possible. We're all scrambling to find out who this woman is and what her decisions are. She's broadly been spoken of as the most liberal of the four justices that, the four justice appointees that Barack Obama was considering. The others being his Solicitor General, Elena Kagan. The Judge Wood out of Chicago, and former Governor Janet Napolitano of Arizona, who is currently the head of the Homeland Security Department. It is clear that Barack Obama was determined to pick a woman, and there's been some criticism about that too. Should we have a court that looks at things like it's time to pick a woman, or time to pick a Latino or a Latina? Is that something a president should consider? Shouldn't they just consider the best person for the job? I fully expect Republicans to argue against her, though they won't win, on the basis that this is some kind of affirmative action, that it's not appropriate for the president to pick someone because she's a Latina. And I want to talk about that, too, because while I understand the politics of it, and I fully support the politics of it, I actually understand the argument as well. I don't know that Judge Sotomayor will be the strongest liberal voice on the court. I would have preferred a judge like Kathleen Sullivan, who I think would have been a very strong liberal voice, or someone like Cass Sunstein, but I know you got to have a woman who I think would be a strong liberal voice. There are very well-respected jurists and scholars that are solid liberals. Judge Sotomayor appears to be a moderate liberal and fully reasonable, but I don't know. I would have liked someone who I felt could take on Scalia toe-to-toe, and I'm not 100% sure she can do that. Not that she doesn't have the drive or the intelligence. She clearly has that. And it's not that she doesn't have the argumentative force. Apparently, she can be quite strong in her arguments against Judge Scalia. But at the end of the day, this court will not be determined by Justice Sotomayor. This court will be determined by Justice Antonin Kennedy, the middle justice. And in a court so ideologically riven between liberal and conservative branches, it is Kennedy's decision 80-something percent of the time that decides the decision of the United States Supreme Court. Is Justice Sotomayor the best justice to convince Antonin Kennedy to go her way? I don't know. I'm not sure about that. Obviously, time will tell. So who is Judge Sonia Sotomayor? She was born in the Bronx. Her parents were born in Puerto Rico. Some commentators have already said she is a child of immigrants. That would be false. People who come to the United States from Puerto Rico, or I should say come to the mainland from Puerto Rico, are not immigrants. They are Americans. Puerto Rico, of course, is the largest territory of the United States in terms of population, one often suggested to be our 51st state, and one that I frankly hardly would support making a state. I would love to have Puerto Rico as part of a state, but obviously it's up to the people of Puerto Rico to make that decision. Puerto Rico is a commonwealth, which means that it has the right, it does not have the right to choose the President of the United States. It has no electoral votes. It has no vote in Congress. But it does fall under United States federal law. Congress can pass laws regarding it. It does not have to pay federal taxes to the extent that others do. That's one thing that makes it different from D.C. The District of Columbia is entirely under congressional control, but has much less freedom than Puerto Rico. But his parents, her parents are not immigrants. They have moved from one part of the United States to another. But she grew up very, very poor in the Bronx. She grew up in a housing project. Interesting. Our president is someone who once received welfare. She grew up in a housing project. Bill Clinton grew up with a single mother and an alcoholic father. For all the Republicans talking about the breakdown of the family, we have had some tremendous leaders come from the most unassuming background. And I think that Judge Sotomayor's background is relevant. It's not completely relevant. It's not all there. One should not overstate her background. One should not say that her background is sufficient. It is not sufficient to be a justice. Let's not forget that Clarence Thomas also had a very unassuming background from Pinpoint, Georgia. But Thomas, who grew up poor and almost certainly mistreated, became very angry. He became extremely angry, not against the people that oppressed him, but against the victims of the oppression. He identified with the overseer. If there's a man with more Stockholm syndrome than Justice Thomas, I don't know who has it. Stockholm syndrome is the famous syndrome that whereby a hostage starts taking on the politics of the people that kidnapped him. Justice Thomas has got strong Stockholm syndrome. His poverty left him bitter and angry at the other people who were still impoverished. Justice Sonia, I can't call her justice yet. Justice appointee, justice nominee, Sonia Sotomayor, seems to have taken the much better route as someone who had been trod upon but worked very, very hard against enormous odds to rise above her circumstances. Her mother became a single mother when her father died at the age of 8. Her mother was a nurse and put her and her brother through some very expensive schools. She finished the top of her class in Princeton undergrad. No small shakes there. And she went to Yale Law School, which I humbly suggest is the best law school in the country. I admit I have a certain bias towards Yale Law School based on my own education, but I have to tell you, the people at Yale Law School are uniformly smart people and people who care about public policy. They're not all good people. John Yoo, as I never hesitate to point out, the author of the torture memos, was in my class at Yale Law School. But I think it's fair to say that no one can doubt her intelligence. She is indeed a very smart woman. She's also a very accomplished woman in the sense that not just educational, but also in her occupation. She was a DA. She was a district attorney, a prosecutor, so she's sat on that side. She's been a judge both at the district level and the appellate level. She's also been a partner in a civil law firm. So she's not just seen criminal law. She's not just been a judge. She's also seen civil law. And she's 54 years old, so she's still relatively young in an age when we want liberal Supreme Court justices to live as far as possible. In terms of her judicial experience, someone more attuned than I, someone who's gone through a ton of statistics that I have not gone through, but someone who I trust, has said that she has more judicial experience than anyone appointed to the Supreme Court in the last 70 years. 70 years. Now, I fully expect Republicans to suggest that because she's a Latina, because she's a woman, that she was somehow improperly chosen. And this is what I call the prejudice that surrounds those opposed to affirmative action. She has more judicial experience than any nominee in the last 70 years. She finished at the top of her class in undergraduate and in law school. And yet they're suggesting that because she's a woman and because she's Latina and because Barack Obama wanted no question, a woman, and almost certainly thought her being a Latino was a plus. Because of that, somehow, something's wrong here. Now, I fully admit that choosing someone solely on the basis of their sex or race is not a good idea. Clarence Thomas was not distinguished. He did not do well in school. He did not have high educational qualifications. Indeed, the ABA, the American Bar Association, considered him not qualified for the job. They have three ratings. They are supremely qualified. That would be the A-plus rating. Qualified. That would be the B-minus rating. And not qualified. That would be a D or maybe an F. Clarence Thomas was an F. And yet Clarence Thomas was clearly solely chosen because of his race and obviously his conservative opinions. Frankly, one of the reasons why George H.W. Bush had to pick someone unqualified for the job is presumably because there are no qualified black Republicans. There is probably not a single African-American Republican in this nation qualified to sit on the Supreme Court. Lots of black Democrats. But it's hard to think of a single black conservative. So he had to scrape the bottom of the barrel. Opponents of affirmative action suggest that affirmative action is all too common. Did Barack Obama choose her as a woman? No question about it. All of the finalists were women. Did he prefer her as a Latina? Well, politics would suggest that is certainly the case. But is she qualified? No question. She is supremely qualified. And she also has that background that helps her understand how ordinary people live. Not just that she's a woman who, frankly, grew up with no money and has no money to this day. She would almost certainly be the poorest member of the Supreme Court, probably even poorer than Justice Souter, who she replaces. But that she's grown up with a debilitating disease, diabetes, one that affects millions of Americans. She has to inject herself with insulin. I don't know how often. I don't need to get that personal. But that, I would suggest, makes one modest, makes one respect the value of life and the value of health care. If you have to inject yourself every day, you're not someone for whom life is taken for granted. This is someone for whom life is a gift and understands that life is a gift for others. This is someone who clearly understands how a poor person in need of health care lives. Now, I do expect Republicans to argue. That's not enough. It's not enough to have empathy for the poor, empathy for women, empathy for Latinos. And you're right. They're right. It's not enough. But they go one farther, and they say it's not relevant. It's not good. They hate empathy. They don't want someone who looks out for common people. Because they say the law is about being blind. You shouldn't favor the poor over a corporation. Well, the other thing that Justice Sotomayor is known for, Judge Sotomayor, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, I'm ready to call her Justice Sotomayor, is pretty strict adherence to precedent. And I respect that, too. I think a judge should play the role of an umpire, as Chief Justice Roberts has said. But I also think a justice has to play more than the role of an umpire. One of my favorite justices in history, Justice Thurgood Marshall, once in a bitter dissent said of his colleagues that they're allowed to make judgment. You can make judgments about the law, Justice Marshall said about his colleagues, but you can't make judgments about poor people. His colleagues were assuming that all poor people were this, that, and the other. And Justice Marshall, who grew up poor, who knew poor people, was someone who recognized that you can't place all poor people in a category like you can place the law in a category. Justice Marshall was someone who understood how the lower half lives. And I think that's important. Lots of time the court is called upon to resolve ambiguous issues of law. Indeed, one could argue that's all the Supreme Court ever does. The Supreme Court doesn't get clear issues of the law. It shouldn't. They shouldn't take cases with clear issues of the law. If the law is clear, the lower courts will do the right thing. And if they don't, they can be summarily reversed. Now, the cases that the United States Supreme Court takes are precisely those on which the law is ambiguous. Congress doesn't draft things perfectly. And let's face it, the United States Constitution, though a document which I revere, isn't perfect either. And its founders could not have foreseen much of the world in which we live. Even the writer of the Declaration of Independence, who said all men are created equal, was a man who owned slaves and did not include women in his famous declaration. Talking, of course, about Thomas Jefferson. So the Constitution and laws have to be interpreted, and it's only the ambiguities that come to the court. It is rare, indeed, that the court overturns an entire body of law. And in deciding how to read ambiguous language, there are justices that purely look at the language, and there are justices that understand the practicalities of their decision. Again, one of my favorite justices, Justice Thurgood Marshall, I remember a very famous case on procedure that I studied in law school. It's not one, certainly, that you've ever heard of. I'm not sure, frankly, which case it is right now. I think it was a case on acceptance of personal jurisdiction. Very technical area of the law, one that only trial lawyers really care about. It matters, because it matters whether or not you can sue someone in this court or you can sue someone in another court. But it's not an issue of civil rights. It's not an issue of abortion. It's not an issue of gun control or constitutional law. It was simply an interpretation of a federal procedural statute. And Justice Marshall, in his inimitable way, examined how that statute, that rule, that federal rule of civil procedure, had been used for the past 20 years. And he concluded that it was a nasty mess. That because of the ambiguities in the rule, that particular rule of law had been all over the map, and judges didn't know how to apply it. It wasn't a well-written rule. So Justice Marshall said, you know what? Because it's been all over the map, I'm going to make a bright line. I'm going to say it means this. And I fully recognize that there's precedents that are all over the map. But I'm going to say it means this, and if you don't like it, Congress, change it. And in doing so, he did litigants a big advantage. The thing about Thurgood Marshall, people think of him as a civil rights justice. They don't think of him as someone who really helped people like me. I was a trial lawyer. And he gave a nice, clear line. It's true if it's this, and it's not true if it's that. And frankly, that's all Congress wanted, a clear line. There were no real strong policy issues one way or the other. So sometimes judges have to have an eye for practicality, not pick these complicated balancing tests where you weigh these 27 factors and judges have opinions on a variety of things and cases between very similar litigants go different ways. That's not fair. It's not fair for two people to have a constitutional question in Massachusetts differently resolved under federal law from two people who have a constitutional issue in Nebraska. It's that kind of respect for the real-world impact of the law that I think President Barack Obama was referring to when he talked about empathy, that Justice Sonia Sotomayor was talking about when she mentioned in a comment that almost certainly you're going to hear soon if you haven't heard already. It's going to be brought up on Fox News, y'all. When she said that she expected that a Latino woman will see issues differently from a white man, and in her breadth of legal experience, will often decide the issues better than a white man. Oh, my God. Is that reverse racism? Is Sonia Sotomayor a white man hater? Well, I guess Karl Rove and Dick Cheney may say that. But no, what she's saying is this. Minorities have a broader range of experience in America. And they do. They do. If you are a straight Christian white male, unless you've got lots of female friends and gay friends and black friends and Jewish friends and Muslim friends and Asian friends and atheist friends and people who are disabled, you may not recognize that the world really doesn't, that America really isn't quite there with equal rights under the law. No, not at all. You may not know of the experience of being stopped for driving while black. You may not believe it exists unless you have a really good black friend who comes to you anguished and tells you about his recent stop by the police, where he was doing nothing but driving a fancy car that he happened to own. There is a breadth of experience. Well, you might ask, okay, fine. A white man may not share the same experience as a Latino woman, fair enough. But she doesn't share his experience. But she does. You see, minorities always know more about majority culture than majorities know about minorities. I assure you, blacks know more about whites than whites know about blacks, on average. Gay people know more about straights than straights know about gays, on average. Jews know more about Christians than Christians know about Jews, on average. And the reason for that is quite simple. When you grow up in a majority culture, it's all around you. It's all around you. And yes, I think there are different female perspectives from male perspectives. I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg, has written very eloquently about those differences. Again, her being a Latina is not sufficient. But it's good. It's a good thing. It's good for Latinos who are the nation's largest minority, now that they're larger than African Americans, to have a voice on the bench. Not someone who will favor Latinos, per se, not at all, but someone who at least recognizes their issues on important things like immigration law, for example, or language law. Now, there are problems. Demographically, it's virtually impossible to get a perfect demographic court. And she will be, to really my astonishment, the sixth Catholic on the court. The court, after Justice Sonia Sotomayor is confirmed, and I have no doubt that she will be confirmed, will have six Catholics, two Jews, and one Protestant. The Protestant being Justice Stevens, the 80-plus-year-old justice, I think he's in his late 80s, who is probably the next one to retire from the court. So when he retires, there'll be six Catholics and two Jews. Now, I understand Justice Breyer is, well, born Jewish, has a Protestant wife and an Episcopal daughter, so we can count him as a half. Still, the majority of Americans are Protestant. It is astonishing to have six Catholics on the court. And the five most conservative justices are all Catholic, which is sort of ironic because Catholics are more liberal on average than Protestants. So you can't have it perfectly in terms of diversity, but it is important to have another voice. It's important that Justice Ginsburg not be the sole woman. You know, you could say, all right, you could divide 5-4, you could maybe divide 6-3 by random choice. Maybe 7-2 by random choice, but 8-1 is almost never by random choice. If you flip a coin 9 times, the chances are you're going to have 5 heads and 4 tails, or 4 heads and 5 tails, maybe 6-3, maybe 7-2. You have to flip a lot of times before you get 8-1. Given that half our population is women, it does not make sense to have 8-1. And so it is important. And it's also important politically. I'm sure that did not escape President Obama or his advisors. In terms of a crass political decision, it was brilliant. Latinos are the growing part of the American population. And they are increasingly supportive of the Democratic Party. Many believe that George Bush obtained a decent share of their votes in 2000 and even in 2004 because he differed with his party on immigration. He was not as harsh as most Republicans are. This appointment may well cement the Latino edge toward the Democratic Party and keep it in the two-thirds, one-third range, maybe even raise it higher. Politically, that's very important. It's very important in states like Colorado and Nevada, in New Mexico, states that went for Obama that did not go for Kerry. And in a state like Arizona, which we are likely to win as well once John McCain is not on the ballot. Indeed, even that Republican heartland of Texas has so many Latinos moving in, that by the time they become citizens and vote, we might win the nation's second largest electoral prize. Clearly, it was a good political decision. Also politically, it's very hard for conservatives to fight against her. She was first put on the court by none other than George Bush Sr. Unless that concerns you too much, you should know that Bush Sr. appointed her as part of a deal to get his conservative justice on too. The idea was he appoints a liberal and a conservative, and he got them both on. Still, I assure you, part of the Democratic talking points will be she was put on the court, the district court, by George Herbert Walker Bush. She was appointed to the appellate court by Bill Clinton. She's going to be confirmed. Barring something that none of us know about, which I fully don't expect, I think the Obama administration has learned a lot about vetting, she's going to be confirmed. 59, soon to be 60 Democratic senators will not vote to turn her down, and neither will the Republicans filibuster. Why would they filibuster when they're going to lose, when they made such a huge deal over Democratic threats to filibuster Alito? Remember, Alito did not win 60 votes. He only won 58. Had the Democrats filibustered him, he would not be on the court. But the so-called Gang of 12 or Gang of 14, depending on who you count, Democrats and Republicans came together to say, you cannot filibuster a Supreme Court nominee. But I have to tell you, 4 days before Judge Sotomayor was chosen, there was talk in Republican circles about a filibuster. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, not because Republicans respect precedent, but because they don't want to be seen as too harsh going against a vote they desperately need, the Latino vote. The Republicans are losing every demographic. They're losing, of course, African Americans. They're losing Jews and Catholics. They're losing Latinas. They're losing Asians. They're losing young people. Young people over 30, under 35, two-thirds vote for Obama. They've lost atheists. They're losing the non-religious Christians. In fact, the only people who actively support the Republican Party in record numbers are fundamentalist Christian white people from the South or from the Mormon Belt. They need Latino voters. Even Karl Rove will tell you they need Latino voters. They can't afford to attack her too harshly. And after all, she's replacing Justice Souter, a man, though appointed by George Herbert Walker Bush, who was on the moderate side of the court, on the left side of Justice Kennedy, who, after all, is a conservative. He may be in the middle of the court, but let's not ever pretend he's not a conservative. He's just not as radically right-wing a conservative as Scalia, Thomas, Alito, or Roberts. They may hold their fire and wait for Obama's appointment of a true liberal to replace Justice Stevens, which even then won't change the court. Stevens, reported, who was appointed by Republican President Gerald Ford, became one of the most reliably liberal members of the court. Not because he changed, but because Gerald Ford, by today's standards, would be a liberal. Republican Party has moved so far to the right. The real question for me is not whether it's a prop, whether she's competent, she clearly is, not whether it should be confirmed, she clearly will be, not whether it's proper to use empathy or the fact that she's a Latina is a good thing politically or for the country, all of that certainly is true. Is she the first Hispanic on the court? Well, purists can argue about that. There was a jurist in the turn of the century, actually appointed by Roosevelt. He was a judge in New York, but he was appointed by Roosevelt in the 30s for 6 years, Benjamin Cardozo, very famous judge. And he, of course, was Jewish, of Latino background, but, you know, Jews were kicked out of Spain and Portugal in 1492, so his Latino background goes very far back. Whether or not you count Benjamin Cardozo, and some would say it would be improper not to, clearly, Sonia Sotomayor represents the great majority of Latinos in this country. Relatively recent to these shores, even if her parents came from Puerto Rico. Relatively poor. Relatively unprivileged. People who have a hard time making ends meet. She clearly represents them. I'm going to give you a chance to call in, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366, if you have a comment, either on Judge Sotomayor or on the topic I'm going to deal with at the end of the hour, the California Supreme Court's decision to uphold Proposition 8. We'll be right back after this.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Over the weekend, the fabled only democracy in the Middle East was not acting much like a democracy at all. Yes, I'm talking about Israel. On May 23rd, the Israeli government sent in troops to try to break up the opening of the second annual Palestine Festival of Literature in East Jerusalem. The event, which was being held at the Palestinian National Theater, was just about to begin when a squad of Israeli border police swarmed in and ordered everyone to leave the literature festival, which had drawn distinguished writers from around the world. Israel's now banning the celebration of literature? This is a democracy? After they were kicked out of the theater, the speakers and some of the audience members wouldn't be deterred. They regrouped at the French Cultural Center. Egyptian novelist Adaf Souf was incredulous that Israel would try to shut down this event. "I had a moment of unbelief," she said. "Surely, even if they were coming to note everything we said and to make a show of strength, they still wouldn't come with their weapons at the ready like this. But then there were more of them," she said, "and more." Ultimately, however, she viewed the day as a triumph, saying it was an example of confronting the culture of power with the power of culture. And may the power of culture prevail. I'm Matt Rothschild. And that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking justice, judges, and justice. The pick of Barack Obama, of Judge Sonia Sotomayor for the nation's highest court. And also, I do want to talk at the last part of the hour about the California Supreme Court decision. Before I get there, I've got Kevin on the line. Kevin, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
You know, I don't see... Hi. First of all, I want to say hi.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you. Common courtesy.
Go ahead. No, you're already in mid-thought. Please, go ahead, Kevin.
Okay. I don't see how the Republicans can argue against this one. And the thing is, like
they can't.
They said
they can't. And to the extent that they do, they're going to really harm themselves politically among Latinos.
Well, Barack Obama wants that argument to come.
Absolutely. And I hope they give it to her hard. I hope they try to make... I hope some Republican racist uses some horrific term to suggest that she's not competent because she's Latino. You know, bring it on. I can't wait to hear that. That would...
Yeah, because basically, if they do that, then basically they're saying, regardless of whatever you did or achieved in Princeton, because she came number one in the class and she won the Pine Award, I think, which is a very prestigious thing, that you know, you should know your place. You belong in the project somewhere in Spanish Home.
Well, they're not going to put it quite like that.
No, but
it's interesting in her own past. There was a question when she applied to a very prestigious law firm, Shaw Pittman, out of law school. And I know how these things work because I was hired from a law firm, from a law school to go to a law firm. But I wasn't asked the question she was asked. She was asked, do you think it's a bad idea for law firms to hire minorities for 3 or 4 years that are unqualified and then fire them? They asked her.
It's like automatically you're a minority, you're unqualified.
Well, that's exactly right. And she actually protested, and a Yale Law Committee found that the corporation had asked these improper questions, and Shaw Pittman apologized. Now this incident is already being used by the Reverend Sun Yat-moon's newspaper, The Washington Times, to suggest that she got preferential treatment because she complained about the racist question that the partner asked her. How you like that?
Well, you're not supposed to complain about. But you see, again, that's a very puritanical predestination, which a lot of black Americans subscribe to, of you should not complain about injustice being done to you.
Right. It's a Booker T. Washington argument. May have made sense in the late 1800s. Does not make
sense. Well, no. It never made sense at all. And
well, when you fear lynching and violence, as this nation did 100 years ago, sometimes you have to. It's kind of like when you're being tortured and you tell them what you want to hear. I mean, I understood where Booker T. Washington was coming from. But, I mean, not to get too much historical. When you're being bound up and lynched. Sometimes you can't quite fight for your rights as much. But the point is that clearly 20, 30 years ago, she had a right to complain. She should have complained. I'm glad she complained. I think it's amazing that now they're using this against her. They're also using against her a decision on the New Haven firefighters. Did you hear about this, Kevin? There's a case where there was a test taken, and the test had discriminatory results. You had the whites and I think one Latino do well, and the blacks didn't do so well. And under current law and current precedent, there's something called disparate impact. In other words, you can have tests that have a disparate impact on one minority population or another, and those are illegal. And the city feared being sued based on this precedent, and so Judge Sotomayor upheld the precedent in actually an unpublished appellate opinion, which is very common, by the way, when judges don't see a major issue of the law. They don't. Every case that's decided by appellate judges isn't written down. Most of them, indeed the majority of them, are not published when they don't see any real legal issues here. In this particular case, the reason why they have this disparate impact idea, which we learned about in law school, which, who knows, may not last under this U.S. Supreme Court. It's coming up before this U.S. Supreme Court, in fact, this session. But the point of it is that a firefighter, for example, a police officer, maybe an even better example, technically doing well on a test may not be the best question of who's the best police officer. Now, for a scientist, I would suggest that, how you do on a test is a good indication of whether you're not a good scientist or a good teacher or, in many respects, though not exclusively, a good lawyer. But when it comes to a police officer or a firefighter, a written test may not be the best way to find out. Maybe the best way to test a firefighter is to see who comes out of the blaze unharmed and manages to save people's lives, which is a physical test rather than a mental test into knowing, the pressure of a fire hydrant. The same is certainly true for police officers. You know, how knowing the specifics on a written test is not nearly as important for a police officer is knowing who to watch, you know, who looks like they're doing something that might be dangerous, and also the idea of having someone of a certain ethnicity in a certain neighborhood so that the police are seen as people you can trust rather than as an occupying army. So the reason for these disparate impact tests are because, particularly for police and firefighters, a written test is not the be-all and end-all. New Haven understood that. Judge Sotomayor understood that. And frankly, it was a very minor opinion. It wasn't a major published opinion. I expect that opinion
you
hear a lot about. You're going to hear a lot about that one. You really are.
Say that again?
You're going to hear a lot about that. I guarantee you Fox News is
going to
repeat that.
Because Pat Buchanan is already going around saying how oppressed white males are.
Now, all of that being said, I still have my own concerns about Judge Sotomayor, and they're concerns based on my own ignorance. I fully admit that. I'm not claiming they're based on anything she's done. It's based on my lack of knowledge. She has not ruled almost at all on abortion, and the couple times she has ruled that the government can have an anti-abortion policy, which I actually think is the law. In other words, she upheld Bush's Mexico City rules, the rules that say that we can prohibit our foreign aid from going to countries that allow abortions, a policy that I strongly disagree with, but I don't think is unconstitutional. The point is she really hasn't, to the extent that she's ruled on abortion, she's ruled in favor of the pro-life people, but again, I think she properly ruled in those cases. She certainly hasn't ruled on gay civil rights, and her history suggests to me that she will have empathy for the disadvantaged, and I think that's a terrific quality in a judge. But on some of the issues, for example, abortion and gay rights, I'm concerned about six Catholics on the court. You know, there are five Catholics, she's the sixth, and I don't want the position of the Catholic Church to determine American civil rights. So I do have my concerns about her on the left.
Well, I think within the Catholic Church, I think it's one of those things where you just need a court as a living organism, which kind of goes with the time. And I think as time goes on, it's going to shape itself. You're going to have a whole ton of Scalia.
True, but I'm concerned that Judge Sotomayor...
more left.
You know, who knows? One of my concerns is that she may be to us what Souter was to the right, someone who we assume is on her side, but turns out not to be. So I'm a little concerned, but I'm going to trust the president on this one and hope he's got it right. Kevin, I got a lot of things I want to talk about in my last 10 minutes, so I'm going to hang up with you and keep doing that.
Okay.
Thank you for your call. I do appreciate it. I do want to read, sometimes I read what people write on my blog, to give you reason to write on my blog at radioinsidescoop.com. A person named Caroline writes, Sotomayor, great choice. I'm still just jaded enough to know that the Republicans will attempt to find some vague, murky, possibly scandalous tidbit about her, though. They always do regarding Supreme Court nominees and political candidates. The one you have found, that I have found, is that she can be very tough and very aggressive in challenging lawyers who appear before her. And I'm sure that's certainly true. But I wonder if the same thing would be said about her as a man. I expect judges to be tough questioners. Now, admittedly, you can do it in a nice way. You can challenge someone without being rude. I don't know that that crosses the line. But I am a little concerned that when people suggest that her being aggressive is somehow wrong. To me, I'm not sure they would give the same indication if it indeed were a man. Okay, I've got a few minutes left. I've got to comment on the California Supreme Court decision. As I said, it doesn't surprise me, it saddens me, but it doesn't surprise me that the Supreme Court found that California allows its voters to amend the Constitution by majority vote. That is the law in California. The Supreme Court upheld the law, and it's a very bad law. It's bad not just for civil rights reasons, but for budgetary reasons. On civil rights reasons, it's clearly a bad idea. No one should ever, ever, ever put civil rights to a majority vote. As we've talked about, Jim Crow laws throughout the South were supported by majority vote. And even though blacks were denied the right to vote throughout the South in the 40s and 50s and 60s, I have no doubt that even if blacks could have voted, in 1950s Mississippi, still the majority would have voted for those Jim Crow laws. Civil rights ever be put to a majority test. And that's indeed why we have a Bill of Rights in our Constitution. But that is the law in California. And as the justices of the California Supreme Court pointed out, California still does have a fairly strong civil unions package. It's not equal. It's separate and unequal. And one judge plaintively wrote how she would encourage the legislature to fix that provision. I think the California Supreme Court was cowed. They are, of course, subject to a vote of recall themselves. That's what direct democracy is all about. I would have liked to see them establish the idea that you can't vote on civil rights. But I do understand the point. That's California law. And it's a really bad law. Thankfully, it is not the law in the great majority of states or in the federal government. In the great majority of states or the federal government, a constitution has meaning. You see, what is a constitution? It is not an ordinary law. It should not be an ordinary law. What's the difference between a constitution and ordinary law? Well, a constitution is supposed to restrain lawmakers. But it can't do that if it can be overturned by a majority vote. That's why the federal constitution requires an onerous process to amend the constitution. Two-thirds of both houses of Congress, three-quarters of state legislators, state legislatures have to vote. And each state has its own provisions. Massachusetts, after allowing gay people to marry equally, to amend its constitution, requires two legislative votes where more than 25% agree it goes to the people, and then two successive votes to the people. Vermont has its own standards. Maine, Iowa, they all do. California's different. California has no constitution. California is a pure direct democracy. Its constitution has no meaning. It's just simply another law. Equality under the law, it's just a law. If California wanted to pass a law saying that, blacks couldn't vote, they could do that under the California Constitution. They just need a majority vote. There are no limitations. They could put all blue-eyed people in prison, at least under the California Constitution. Might be overturned under the federal one, I don't know. But California has basically said it has no constitution. And this has a problem in its budget process as well. You see, when you allow too much direct democracy, the people are always going to vote for things like more spending, less taxes, and a balanced budget, even though the three of them together cannot be done. And that indeed what California has done as well. California passed Proposition 13, preventing the California state government from raising property taxes. Indeed, it required the legislature to come to a 60% supermajority in order to raise taxes. And at the same time, voted for massive spending because everyone wants less taxes and more spending. This means that California is about to go bankrupt. And for all you might want to complain about the Republican governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's not the best, it's really mostly not his fault. It's mostly the fault of the fact that California has a little bit too much direct democracy. Now, I'm all for democracy. But when people don't have to deal with the consequences, when they have a requirement, as California does, that it keep its taxes low, its spending high, and its budget balanced, you end up with an illogical proposition. It's impossible. California has now borrowed so much money, it's about to default. Indeed, it has defaulted. It's not paying its bills. Some suggest the government should bail it out. I suggest that the federal government tell California, you want bailout money, you change your constitution so that the people cannot vote these illogical things. Sometimes representative democracy works. One area of the country that does not have this illogical direct democracy is the District of Columbia. The District of Columbia allows referenda, and I'm not against referenda. I just don't think they can ever amend a constitution, at least not by a majority vote. And D.C. says that. The District of Columbia says if you have a referendum, then It cannot appropriate funds or negate a budget, so that gets rid of the budget problems with California. And it cannot violate the Human Rights Act. That portion of the D.C. Constitution, such as it is, that prohibits discrimination based on race or sex or sexual orientation. In the present case, the D.C. government has recognized marriages from out of state. And it is true, as Lott points out in the chat room, that Congress has the final say in D.C. That's certainly true. But D.C., in its wisdom, like most states, does not let the people overrule basic human rights. The Human Rights Act in D.C. cannot be overturned by referendum. Other things can, things that don't relate to human rights, things that don't relate to the budget, but not this. And the Washington Post just called me an hour ago, right before my show began, to get my view on this, and I suspect you'll be able to read online in the Washington Post tomorrow. You'll be able to see my citation of the law. Civil rights should never be up for a vote. California's got a crazy system that should be changed. The majority of states and the District of Columbia, thank God, have a system whereby civil rights are never put up for a vote. And that's as it should be. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have a comment, post it at RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine, signing off.